Good morning and welcome to Family Life. Your host, Saliha Muhammad and Dr. Nadia Muhammad. And we are joined by Dr. Muhammad today. We have an exciting show for you. This program is sponsored by New Africa Exxon, the Rod C. It's your life, health, mind, and human. In the name of Allah, the most gracious and most merciful, I greet the listening audience in the peace of Assalamu alaikum. This week's discussion here on Family Life is counting and you know, this becomes very poignant in daily life, especially now. There's so many things going on in our country and in the world. So counting our blessings becomes imperative on a daily basis. So we're going to take time on this show to do just that. We have Dr. Nadia Muhammad with us today. Dr. Muhammad, welcome.
Well, thank you. Assalamu alaikum.
Walaikum as-salam. I'm going to begin with a personal experience. This week, my daughter currently has a house guest, a friend from Georgia where she grew up. And both she and her friend, they have this epigrammatic personality with the proclivity to light. And what is light? Light is Allah. Light is the God. Light is the Creator. And whomever you refer to our Creator, having the scintilla of hope extended to exactness. And what am I saying here? Having that hope of a mustard seed, and we all know the size of a mustard seed, extended to exactness. Exactness is a result of faith. I'm going to bring Dr. Muhammad in on this. Dr. Nadia, what is the difference between religion and faith?
Well, you know, I'm going to be quite frank with you. Everyone has their own definition of religion and their own definition of faith. So I can only speak from the purview of my own personal experience. And so as I look at faith, I'll start off with faith. When sometimes, you know, as children, we're coming up in the home and sometimes we may bump ourselves. This is an analogy I'm using, or you hit yourself and you fall and you hurt your knee. And someone is there to help soothe your pain, your first teacher, your first mother, your first nurse is your mother. And so you're spiritually at that point where you're depending on someone to guide you throughout life. And as you become an adult and as you grow spiritually and mentally and emotionally as a human being, you tap into the faith that Allah blesses you with. And so when you stumble as an adult, you know, for me, there's an inner source of comfort and reassurance that I have in my spirit that is all from Allah. And so that power of divine love and mercy and guidance and blessings, you know, I have that spiritual resolve, and it eases any type of sadness or fear or any type of dismay that I may be experiencing. And I know that I have faith that Allah will get me through each and every, you know, obstacle that I may confront. And in the sense of faith, I begin to know through experiences and through trials that will get me through it. Because why? Because whenever I face an issue or struggle, Allah never, ever, ever lets me down. And that's when the faith begins to grow and it begins to evolve. And you go from faith to knowing. And so there's, you know, and so that continues to grow. And when you think about religion, it depends on how you look at it, because religion can be very ritualistic. You know, sometimes we just go through the motions of, you know, through rituals, through religion. But I think religion is really based upon what a person believes in their God and their creator, whether you call them Allah, whether you call, you know, God Yahweh or whatever it is that you call God, the oneness of God, the creator. It's just that's not really religion. That's just, I think religion and knowing who God is just two different things. So that's how I look at it. Religion to be viewed as what you believe, your belief system, how do you see it, the higher power, you know, like I said, by whatever name you call them. But religion is not just rituals. You know, religion is a person's way of life, and for me, it's to serve Allah and to submit my will to do Allah's will. How to describe my religion is a way of life for me, not just a ritual. And so that's what I would say for that.
This is beautiful. You know, I'm going to bring up another experience, and I'm going to take some time. I think this is a good segue into how this show, Family Life, Sanctified New Africa, Excellent Iran, and how this came about. The show began in September. And here we are, getting ready to begin June. A few more months, it'll be 1 year, but what a fantastic segue to speak about this show and how it came to existence on faith. You said something, Dr. Nadia, very interesting. You said faith is known. When prior to the show beginning, I knew nothing about broadcasting in the sense of conducting a weekly show. Certainly, my education platform segued me into aspects of communication and speaking to population health, great unusual tools. But as far as doing a weekly broadcast, I had no idea what it was going to require. So the producer and sponsor of the show, Murad Muhammad, the renowned boxing promoter. And let me tell you how it really began. We were speaking one day, and he called, and he said, I'm going to do the weekly show Fridays on a different platform. I'm going to have the public able to call in, and I would like for you to be on the show. And I said, sure. And I think the show is going to begin my time at 2 o'clock in Eastern Time, so Pacific Time, and Eastern Standard Time is going to begin at 5 o'clock. And I said, great, Uncle Malad, wonderful. When does the show start and the time? Oh, it starts in 4 minutes. I was like, what? Literally, I was like, what are you talking about? And the rest is history. So, 4 minutes, I called into the show, and then I would you know, had the time to be on that position on a weekly basis. And then out of nowhere, he said, "Now give me your own show." And I looked behind me and on the side of me and said, "Who could he possibly be speaking to?" "He cannot possibly be speaking to me." And I said, "My own watch." He said, "Your own show." And I said, "You know, I don't know about this. I'm a moron. I'm shy. And every time I say that to people, they laugh at me. Especially my family, my daughter, she goes into hysterics. She finds me to be that funny. But I was speaking my truth, thank you very much. And a lot says, "Well, what difference does it make? People can't see you." And I said, "Oh, you have a point there." And the rest is history. And what our goal is to bring information to the family life audience, because we are a family, and unless that foundation is protected, then our mere existence on earth is compromised. So this became a dedication, and the show, Dr. Dizzy said, faith is knowing.
Yes.
It's a way of life, and I didn't know much, but I'm learning, and I'm still learning, and when there are mistakes, I'm going to run, and I speak about them graciously. He said, "Don't worry, because you're learning, Now, that itself is inspiration.
Indeed.
It allows one to develop confidence. And you say, all praises are due to the God."
That's right.
So it has been a joy. And that faith is now turning into the knowing. Our first show, Dr. Nadia, was dedicated to our mother.
Yes. Remember that.
Yes, Hadia El Amin Muhammad, Mr. Al Golex. And you said it was a very, I'm going to do a little mini review. You said it was a very cathartic experience for you. Can you elaborate on that just for a few minutes?
I just think in general, coming full circle, when you are focusing on caregiving, whether it's intimately in your home or whether it's intimately involved with the community, things you always leave with something that you carry with you for the rest of your life. Once Allah grants you His permission to care for somebody else's, for His creation, essentially, He's granting you the protection. He's granting you permission to protect them and to care for them, be there for them, and to be their voice, and to be their hands and to be their feet. I mean, when you're standing in that place, it's very humbling when you recognize that you're able to do it by the permission of Allah and you're doing nothing on your own. And so when you look at a person, you know, they're not Allah, but they are the creature of Allah. And so I take that very seriously. And so Allah left her in my care, I believe that, to care for her, to call her, to be there for her as if she, you know, she took care of me, as the Quran said, you know, be good to your parents and chide not at them because they took care of you when you were little. So I know that my mother wasn't little, but I know that she went back into a stage in which when we all start off with humble beginnings, then, you know, we have to have someone that cares for her, and she was in that particular state. So it was therapeutic to be able to know that Allah, He's merciful. And there was a time when I couldn't do for myself and that I was able to give that gift of life to another human being. What more special could I have been to be able to care for my mother in a way that she cares for me? Said that it was a cathartic experience. I mean that from the vantage point of just being able to give her what she was able to give me, and that Allah gave me permission you know, to protect her and to be her voice, and he lent her to my care, and I thought that was awesome, an awesome experience, and I was very humbled, and I have gratitude for that. And so it was a life-changing event. I've never been the same since then, and I've become more of a compassionate and empathetic individual. But she's just not my mother, but for humankind, and it expanded my breath as a human being. And I'm just going to say this to everyone on the call. If you're in a situation where you feel like it's very severe, that you won't be able to get out of it, know that you will be able to get out of it, because Allah says in the Quran, after difficulty comes ease. Surely ease comes after difficulty. And so just be patient. You may not want to hear that right now, but I promise you, if you have this idea of faith, which is the name of the faith of a grain of a mustard seed, you'll be able to get through this, and you'll be able to get through even more challenges as you're confronted with them. So as challenges come, don't run away from challenges. Walk through them, because it makes you a better and stronger and more faithful individual. So I just wanted to add that about my experience. Thank you
so much. You're so very welcome. You know, this past Ramadan, and you know, like our grandmother, you know, who was also the nation 16A, and she became Sister Halima, and she passed, she transitioned at 93. She was one of my dearest friends, not only my grandmother, but one of my dearest friends. And because of her life experiences, she was not able to cry. So I think hereditarily, I don't know, somehow I picked that up from her. But this past Ramadan, my husband and I was completing a dua. And I remember Uncle Malak, this was over a decade ago. This is a long time ago. We were having challenges. And he said, well, how often do you do this? And I thought about it, and I said, we certainly pray together, and then we, you know, independently, you know, do our duty. And I said, but together? Not very often. This is, you know, well over a decade ago. And he said, listen, start completing duas together. And we've been doing it ever since. Mm-hmm. And this past Ramadan, it was, you know, a miracle, because we're completing the duas and the tears is just running down my eyes. I said, oh my gosh, I'm crying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the first time in probably years. You know, just literally just crying. And I was looking, and Jean was standing on the side of me, and I was looking at the fruit. We had an array of fruit. We had avocado, we had mango, we had bananas. And I couldn't swallow my speech at the time. And Jean looked at me, and he said, I know. And I looked at him, and I still couldn't form speech, and he said, I know. You are faithful to Allah we have. You're thankful for the fruit. And I started smiling. I was like, yes. And then, of course, I couldn't be quiet, right? Because without telling him, he intuitively understood those tough times we had. So, Dr. Nadine, we spoke specifically about the Quran, the scripture, that Allah promised us after difficulty comes ease. And here, with that faith that we had together and as a family, we came through that difficulty and we had plenty of fruit, and not only plenty of fruit, but different varieties of fruit. And it was such a blessing, and I stopped to thank Allah from where we came. It was such a profound experience.
So powerful. Very powerful.
Which brings up my next point. Okay, so Dr. Nadir, your dissertation specifically, you completed your PhD in public health, community health, and your dissertation was on caretaking.
Yes.
What is the most profound data based on your research that you noticed that brought insight to you?
Right. So, yeah, that's a very, very good question. Well, my research in particular, what I did find is that for many caregivers, it's not that people don't want to care for their family members and their loved ones. They have very, very limited resources. And so I think the psychological impact that caregivers experience is overwhelming. And they experience depression, social isolation, financial troubles, and emotional burdens. And so I think if we can afford more resources to this very important population, that, you know, caregiving will be a little bit more, not to say that it will be less burdensome, but it would afford individuals opportunity to have the help and resources that they need in order to keep their loved ones in the home setting. And so oftentimes, many people, they can't really, they have to work, right? They have to care for their families. And it's very difficult to maintain an elderly individual, whether it's your mother or it's your father, or your other relative, to keep them in the home setting because people need to work. And they're not able to afford them the opportunity for in-home services such as, you know, activities of daily living, cooking and cleaning and bathing and toileting and doing all the things that dementia patients need. So my dissertation is on Alzheimer's caregiving. And so, and it's not that it's a burden for a believer, but let's keep it real. It can be very, very difficult and cumbersome to keep a loved one at home when you have to go to work, right? You have to make money and you have to be able to feed yourself, feed your family, provide care for the person that you're overseeing. And they need resources too. They need healthcare resources. They need social resources. And it's just, it can just be overwhelming at times. So I find that, you know, there is a strong relationship between caregiving, you know, just taking care of a loved one, such as, you know, toileting and bathing and just the day-to-day cooking and healthcare management and depression. There's a relationship between the two. So as you see the burden go up, you also see the depression go up, and there's a positive correlation between depression and caregiver burden. It's just a reality, and it's very, very pervasive, more so in the African-American Black community than it is in the white community. And because I'm not saying all white people do this, it's just of Caucasian background, but, you know, you find Caucasian, this is not something that I'm making up, find that more Caucasian people from that community and that population, they tend to put their loved ones, you know, rehab centers or long-term care centers and nursing homes, then, you know, you'll see a person from the Black community. We tend culturally to keep our loved ones at home with very, very, very limited resources. And so, but at the same time, we experience these types of social ills that come with caregiving. And it's something that we need to pay a closer attention to. So that's why it's important for us to have further discussions on platforms such as this, this show, and other platforms to bring this attention to our community and kind of rally around one another so that we can team up and help our community with the resources that they need. Or should they be in a situation with caregiving for a loved one? It's just not dementia, people who are of the elderly. It's people who have special needs. You know, our community is bombarded with things such as autism and Down syndrome and mental health. And just we need a whole lot of resources to rally behind the people in our community, and we need to do more of that. But thank you for even bringing that up. And this is a discussion that we should continue to have again on this platform and other platforms as well.
And this is our very goal here at Family Life. So, you know, depression, and you certainly have extended your time to that very subject, mental health, and you're going to continue to do that in the future because we want to start projecting an outcome, a population health, a healthy outcome. So utilizing those tools early on becomes imperative.
Yeah,
it brings up another experience. I'm sorry, did you want to say something? Go ahead.
I was just saying it's important to get buy-in from the community to see that this is a need. I mean, that's why this show is important, and to be able to get the word out because, you know, people are at home suffering.
Yes. They don't talk
about these types of things. They think that they're the only ones that are going through this, and they simply aren't. But we have to do more as a community, you know, whether it means going door to door. And I'm saying don't just go to anybody door to door. But, you know, if you have a relative that you know that's in need of help and they're elderly and they need, you know, there's things out there, like it's the 21st century. You have Instacart. You have Whole Foods. You have Amazon. You can send food to a person's home or a relative's home who's having a hard time getting out. So I think we're just living in an environment where it's just a sense of entitlement and it's very narcissistic in the sense that we really think about ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we have to come out of that sort of thinking and to really start being more empathetic and compassionate to our neighbors. And when I say neighbors, it doesn't have to be a physical neighbor, but that's important as well. But there's more that we can do to help, you know, one another. And sometimes we don't feel the impact until it actually happens to us. And sometimes you wonder why, you know, things happen to you. You may say that it's bad. You may feel that it's bad. It's just a trial, a lot of time to see who you are as a person and to test you. And then when you go through these things, you become more sensitive to what other people are going through, and then you could be more of a help. So a lot doesn't have to strain you in order for you to do something for somebody else. It doesn't even have to come to that.
That's right.
You don't, you just come out of your comfort zone. There's always someone that's in need. So I think it's important to get buy-in from our community and just to rally around one another and to be more sympathetic. And we say that we are Muslims, and this is what we're supposed to do, feed the poor, and to be, to pay charity and zakat and do things that we say we're to do more of it. You can never do enough good. There's always more good to hand out than what we are doing. So and even if it's, like I said, cooking a bean soup or good home-cooked meal, let's just try to come out of our comfort zone. You'll feel so much better. You feel so much better as a person. So thank you. I just wanted to add that caveat.
You're welcome. I'm going to add a bit more because we grew up together. And, you know, our mother, Sister Hadia Alami Muhammad, she took care of her mother, Sister Ned. And, boy, did she do a phenomenal job. Oh, my, she was our first example. She had Mama's IV hooked up and the meter she could put in and she could feed her food. I said, Lord, have mercy. And the mother had shared with me that she always wanted to be a nurse. And she was Dr. Mom. Well, he said, what was she Dr. Mom that be?
She was the first Dr. Muhammad.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm just following her lead.
My goodness. Oh, she would have the medical community on their toes. And so she was very involved, and we were a very involved family. We would always do some of the things that you just suggested. So I want to share with the listening audience what you used to do, you and your son, and that extended to her end of life. Your sons at that time, and this is before your second son came, when Mama was transitioning, and again, she transitioned at 93 years, and Omi was so blessed to have her. And this is what my grandmother shared with me. And Nadia, she was completing her undergraduate degree, she was working, and she was a single mom raising her son. And every day, not once a week, not once a month, every single day. She was the same with our mother.
Mm-hmm.
After school and work, she would go to mother's home and extend her services. And my grandmother said this to me, and I was so touched. She said, you know, she's talking about you, and at this time, this specific time, Jahlil, your oldest son.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, she comes here every day. And she said for years, she said beyond, and she said it like this, beyond my remembrance, when she enters that door, she greets me and she gives me a kiss. And she has not failed once in doing that.
Mm.
And she shares how much that meant to her. And I don't know if I was good. I certainly wasn't doing any time for grandma. But I made sure after that I did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there you were. You didn't know that, did you?
No. Who knew?
So after that, I would do that, and then with mom, it was so funny because mom was a funny person. So we're both very funny people. So mom, I remember, and that was to come back to Jahlil, because I just want to give a listen an audience an example of what you're suggesting. You are a vivid example of what you're suggesting. So, mother began her college career while she was pregnant with her ninth child.
Mm.
She went on to graduate summa cum laude, which is an honor student, and she took a series of psychology courses, and she had nine children. So often, she was not able to show a great deal of affection because she was constantly busy. Well, this is during my last year of high school, so I was about 15. And she started kicking us all the time. You were smaller. Sal, we used to call you Sarah and Tahi, the babies, the three babies, because you guys were sisters. And so you got it early on. And I said to my mother, I said, what are you doing? And your mom wants to customer kissing me all the time. I said, what are you doing? And she went to explain as a result for my psychology kiss my ass. And she wasn't showing us enough affection and how important it was to physically show us that attention.
Mm.
And she never stopped to the end of her life.
Mm.
And you know, you're a witness to that, and you're a witness to that, and she never stopped. And she always would say, education is what you do with it.
Mm.
So I thought that was an exemplary example. So let me go back to the oldest son, before I do, to the listening audience. This program is sponsored by New Africa Exploit, Marat Beef. So I'm going to go back to the 14-year-old, 13, 14, and he would come with you.
Yes.
And this young man would pull up a seat next to his great-grandmother's bed, And on the weekend, sometimes to give Granny a break, he would stay up with his great-grandmother all night. And she said, you know, this is just not normal. He can be out with his friend. She said, I don't know what I've done in life. This is our conversation. Oh, Mom and I used to talk about everything. I said, don't ask all the questions, you know. And she said, I don't know why. She said, don't he have friends? I said, Grandma, he has a lot of friends. That wasn't a problem for that young man. I said, oh, he has a lot of friends. I said, but you were important to him. She said, I don't know what I've done. But surely Allah has been my shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at that woman in admiration. And you know the deer in her night, she was lucid. She knew she
was. She wasn't clear.
Wasn't she
very
clear? She was clear.
Yeah, she was. There's nothing nebulous about her and her thought process.
She was clear. And Mother provided such a beautiful environment for her and a beautiful home. And this is, I'm sharing with the audience, these are the standards in which we grew up on.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Our great aunts, we would go see our aunts when they were ill and under the weather. And if we didn't, our mother had something, our grandmother had something to say about it. It was automatic for us. This is the legacy we extend. So, very important. I went to a naturopathic doctor many, many years ago. And I brought up these early experiences for a reason, because I want to expound on a few things. And Dr. Muhammad, I'm going to bring your second son into this process of how this legacy extended with the caretaking of our mother. But first, I went to the naturopathic doctor, and he was in the process of completing an iridology chart. And this chart certainly is an alternative medicine technique that uses colors, patterns, and various other properties of the iris to analyze an individual's overall health. And one of the things he noticed is that, and I thought it was so amazing how nothing is a secret. And he, I'm just going to touch on this, I'm not going to elaborate, I want to make another point. And he said, before 5 years old, he said, there was a burden placed upon you that was beyond your years. And I said, doctor, what do you mean? He said, I had a 4-year-old, he had a burden of a 25-year-old. I said, oh. And I knew exactly what he was talking about. So at 4 years old, I entered the hospital with tuberculosis. And it was, you know, an experience of a sanatorium for a 4-year-old. And I was hospitalized for 14 months away from my home. And I'm not going to go into the specifics of this particular show, but just that burden of a 4-year-old being away from her mother and her father and her family, and was hospitalized for 14 months at 4 years old. He stopped the examination when I shared aspects of that story. And he said, how in the world did you survive this and become the person you are today? And I told him a lot. I said, a lot. And I said, the strength of my family and my Islamic community. And I went on to explain to him that I grew up in the Nation of Islam. And he had family members. It was, you know, ironic because he had family members from the same Islamic community in North New Jersey. So he was very well aware of what I was explaining to him. My family, first of all, the law, and I said my family and the Nation of Islam, and these relationships that exist today where we serve on a platform of family. So I'm going to bring a second son in. So this is years later. Mama has transitioned. May Allah be pleased with her and grant her gender. So her daughter was now transitioning, our mother. It was the same scenario. The youngest son now said was right there, side by side, with his mother, often assisting her. So we had great family as mom. The oldest son would come in on visits to see his grandmother, but the daily life your son was living at home with you, he was right there. And we were worried because, you know, we kept mother in her home for as long as we could. And then, of course, you took her to North Carolina with you, so we were really concerned about that. And I remember you sharing with me she was coming back from one of her hospital visits, and she was sharing with the paramedic how happy she was to be home. And that gave me such ease and such great feeling because home was with you now, but she considered it home.
Yes.
And she was so happy. And you know, she would go, our mother's disease, she would go in and out of being lucid, you know, at times, of course, she was not. So here we are on the legacy on the platform, right? Mother's on the phone, and I'm speaking to her. I could not believe I was speaking to her. I could not believe she was as lucid as she was. I was in awe. And she shared some special things with me. And one of the things she shared with me was how much she said, you know, and I thought, I said, my gosh, am I in a time warp? Because what mother wanted to share with me, along with some other things that she shared with me, is how much she appreciated her grandson who was there with her on a daily basis. And she said, well, doesn't he have friends? I was like, my mother asked me the same question.
No, can you
hear? Decades ago. And I said, yes, mother, yes. And she said, well, he stays here with me and his mother. And she just didn't mentioned him. She mentioned her other grandchildren. But she was saying she wanted me to know how comfortable she was,
mm-hmm.
how safe she was, and how she was loved.
Mm.
My dear, you did a phenomenal job.
All praise be to Allah.
And now, here we go. The family is extending and growing. You're about to become a grandmother for the first time.
Exciting times.
Exciting.
Yes.
Speak about with regard to that wonderful, exciting news and that platform. So I'm sharing family history.
Mm.
Growing up in Islam with the listening audience, how important was that platform? Is that platform, because it's still very much is our platform, going to support your new role as a grandmother?
Okay, let me just preface that just by saying I have the lawn landscapers here, so if you hear grass in the background, the cutter and the noise and the mower, please forgive me. I'm being candid and honest. It's quite noisy, so I don't know if the audience can hear it or not. But anyhow, I just want, in all seriousness, I just wanted to state that I would say to the listening audience and to anybody that's going through a trial or a struggle in life, with, you know, a loved one, with your children, with your adult children, you know, just, you know, becoming a grandmother, I would say to never lose sight of a teachable moment that you could share with your children.
Ooh.
So that you could show them. It's not just teaching, but you teach the showing. And when you don't lose sight of those teachable moments, like, you know, and I read the Bible too, and as most of you should read the Bible as well, the Quran is our holy book. But in the Bible, it says train a child in the way that he should go. And when he gets old and when he grows, he will not depart from it. And I'm paraphrasing that. But you have to teach children when they're young. You don't wait until they're 16 or 17 to let them speak up or to be, you know, to express themselves and whatever it is that they want to do. A child pretty much knows what they want to do when they're children. You see creativity in them and they put puzzles together. They probably want to be a surgeon. They probably want to make a great surgeon. They like to put people back together. They like to put things together. And you see their soul, whatever it is that they do. And then you show them. You teach them that life is not always going to be perfect. There are times that are going to be hard. There's going to be times when you have to care for a loved one. You have to make sleep for a person who needs sleep work. You have to, you know, provide. You have to minister to people. Even when they're in the womb, you teach that. And so when they come out and they grow and you teach them, it won't be a novelty to them. It won't be something that's foreign. For me, I try to live my life in that way, being an example, but truly feeling passionate and blessed by Allah to be able to give. And when I look at Allah's mercy, and I'm in all seriousness, Allah offers variety. You think about the trees, and you think about the different types of trees, and there's no two snowflakes alike. There's no two blades on a leaf that's alike. Allah offers variety. You have forests. You have rainforest. You have the Amazon. You have medicine that's in the Amazon. Allah offers diversity. And so that when you see a flower or you see a plant and it has to grow, you know how it grows? It needs sunlight. It needs water. It needs organic materials. It needs dirt. It needs care. And so you have to water your own soul too. And you have to water the souls of your children as well. And then when you do that, they grow, they mature, and they evolve to be beautiful people. You have a stake in that. You invest in your family, your children, your community, and I promise you, they will invest in you. I'm a living testimony.
And you are. So you were the seventh child, and you were very sickly. So I was 9 years old, and mother couldn't get too much sleep. So I remember some of the sisters from the community would come pick you up just so she could get some sleep. This is the platform. This is the legacy in which we can walk on. And at 9, my mother would show me how to suction the lungs. And she was a nurse. I told you she was the first doctor in the family. She would do this herself. And she would show me how to do this. And so it starts very early on. I was 9 years old. You know, that continued throughout, you know, my youth and so forth. So learning that lesson very early on becomes, you know, very important. And it's not so much, you know, it's interesting that today says, oh, to put a burden on the child that early. It wasn't a burden. It was a teaching moment.
Yes.
It was a very important teaching moment. And it created the fiber of my being. Because I learned caretaking very early on. And then, you know, when I had that opportunity to take care of mother, those patterns went into action. But really, my brother Joaquin taught me what to do. But the thing is, Joaquin is like so amazing. You know, he was with our mother on the daily when she was in her home. And so he taught me what to do, how to lift her, how to, you know, this is our special needs brother. He taught us these things. And so we learned from each other, you know, that platform created for us to exchange information because not one of us knew it all. So we had to share information. I remember traveling to North Carolina and you gave me the directives as to how to take care of mother when I got into the facilities, what needed to be done, the doctors I needed to call on. I was able to perform that with exactness based on your instruction. So, you know, absolutely, I'm going to reiterate what you said earlier, Dr. Nadia. Get involved. And it doesn't have to be with strangers. Start off with family. Please start off with family. Make sure those who live involved, you know, are not isolated. They cannot have a conversation with you. Just do that conversation. They're going to tell you what you need. Go visit them when you can. This is extremely important, especially in today. Make sure that elderly is getting the proper nutrition. Make sure those children are getting the proper nutrition. We can help. We can assist each other with this on a daily basis. So thank you so much, Dr. Nadia. Your final words. We're going to close out in a few minutes. Your final words, please.
My final words is keep fighting. As long as you have life, you have hope. And as long as you have breath, you have strength. Don't give up on yourself and don't give up on others that are around you. And so I thank you for allowing me and giving me the opportunity to speak in this setting. And I continue to pray for our families, our communities in the world because we are living in some very, very, very perilous times, but it's also a joyous time. So again, thank you. May Allah continue to bless each and every one of you and all that you do. Assalamu alaikum.
And where may they reach you, Dr. Muhammad, if they want to reach you?
You can reach out. It's a very, very long email, but I'm going to try to make it simple. It's my first name, which is N-A-D-I-A. It sounds like Nadia, but it's actually Nadia. Muhammad. I know you want to spell that, but it's N, maybe not. N-A-U-H-A. So it's Nadia Muhammad 12 at yahoo.com. So feel free to reach out to me. If you need tips, you just want to talk, need to chat, hey, I'm here.
Excellent, and thank you for sending that to the listening audience. This program is sponsored by New Africa Excellent Neurology. I want to thank you for tuning in now live and tuning in later on our show. You can go on the you up at the Excellent Love Speaks website and access the re-recording of the show. Every beginning, such positive accolades. And I want to take time to thank our audience, to thank our sponsor, Rod Muhammad, New Africa Excellence. And thank you, Dr. Nadia, for joining us today. We will speak again next month, June.
Yes.
I believe June is the summer
coming
out here. Thank you for joining us today. You may reach me at Salinah, my first name, SalinahMoh77@gmail.com. Thank you all for joining. As-salamu alaykum.
Salam.